Everything is so emotional. Everything is emo, and we are too. Why do these songs make us feel the way they do? Everything is emo, a praise chorus. Everything is emo, instability somehow gives us security. Everything is emo, a praise chorus.
This is a praise chorus, a frustratingly comprehensive emo podcast, because the internet definitely needed another one of those. I am Talisa, and my wisdom teeth are still revolting against me a week later. Thanks for asking.
I'm Alex, and unfortunately, as you probably already know, people.
God, okay, and I'm James, and Yellow Card absolutely does not deserve $15 million from a lawsuit. Also, Alex, you gotta work on your intros. I'm gonna keep saying that every week. Please and do. You're in the same room now, so well, I can give you that knowing smolder and be like, Alex?
I understand, but this is a Famous Horse eBooks tweet, so to be fair to me on this case.
Yeah, rip to horse _ eBooks. Anyway, today we're joined by Robin Edwards, behind Cuddlecore progenitors, or at least contemporaries, Lisa Prank. Lisa Prank's new record, Perfect Love Song, is out now via Father Daughter Records. We'll talk about that at the very end of the program, so stick around. But for now, hi, Robin. How's it going?
Hi, it's going great.
Did I give your intro justice?
Yeah, it was perfect. You forgot to mention Genius and Failed Figure Skater, though.
Failed figure skater. Give me more info, please.
I just like saying that because it sounds dramatic. I took some figure skating classes when I was a child. I was never really going to make it big, though. I'm too tall, and I started too late.
My second cousin, he's like an accomplished figure skater.
Really?
Yeah, Jonathan Cassar. He lives in L.A.
Dang. I remember having this moment as a child where I realized that I was like too old to ever go to the Olympics. And also, like, not good enough. It was heartbreaking.
Going to the Olympics seems like a once-in-a-lifetime either way to be praised or to be publicly humiliated, and I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I can't do a lot of sports anyway.
Well, like, obviously, I failed at figure skating, so that's why I had to start doing music.
Here's what you didn't fail at, though, Robin, and this is important. You didn't fail at crafting the perfect love song. So to warm up today, since I feel like we're off to a wonky figure skating start, let's wrap around and talk about perfect love songs. I'll start, because I came up with this question. Donna Lewis, her most famous song, I Love You Always Forever. That song walked so Carly Rae could run, so that's basically how I'm going to sell that. But if you haven't heard this song, pause the podcast, rip this one out. That didn't sound right. And then continue with our program. No more faux pas. Alex, go.
Well, the Get Up Kids defender has logged on to tell you about the hit song I'll Catch You that closes their second album, Something to Write Home About. I heard this song when I was 14 and cried because I was 14.
We were all 14. So, Talisa, I think you have, like, a 14-year-old legendary pick, right?
I do have a 14-year-old legendary pick. This is the hardest question in my life, because half of me wanted to do I Will Always Love You, both the Whitney Houston version and the Dolly Parton version, because a lot of people don't know that the Whitney Houston version is a cover of Dolly Parton version, which is so nice and delicate. But I chose another cover, which is Kiss Me by Newfound Glory, originally by Sixpence None the Richer.
That's a beautiful one.
It's great. I love the guitars in it. I love the harmonies in it. It's honestly just a really good song. And the Newfound Glory version just, like, rips.
So, Robin, what perfect love song doth rip for you?
Well, there's so many. One that comes to mind for me is Bruce Springsteen's Tougher Than the Rest. I love that. The Emmylou Harris version is also amazing. I love that song because it talks about how love is, one of the lyrics is, if you're rough enough for love, I'm tougher than the rest. And I like the idea that you have to be rough and ready for love. It's not an easy thing.
I think we're rough and ready today. Not to tease out our yeehaw episode, but Talisa, you're more yeehaw than all y'all of us.
I have a tattoo of a dog in a cowboy hat. I am more than ready for this episode.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so we'll start with setting the scene straight, which is the first section of the podcast, where we give a little history on the artist. Today, we are talking about Kacey Musgraves, pop and country icon. I think that she's doing more of her like transition into pop at this point. So I don't know if I want to still call her a country artist, but she does have like two solidly country records. The newest record, which the song we're talking about today is off of, does, I feel like, teeter the line between pop and country. But she started off as a country artist. She has 6 Grammys, including like Record of the Year last year. I think it was last year that she got Record of the Year. But I think all of her other Grammys are like Best Country Song or Artist. I forgot to write that part down, but I know that she has 6 of them. I found out about her from the song Follow Your Arrow, which is a bi anthem, because the chorus literally has the line, kiss lots of boys or kiss lots of girls if that's something you're into, which is not only very woke for country, but is such a fucking line.
It's extremely good, and to start off our fiancé counter early, that is how JC found the band as well, since their godmother sent it to them to be supportive of their bias.
Wait, that rules.
That's like a very good icebreaker. I love that so much.
It's very good.
That's very
good. Oh my god, I did not know that. I feel like me and JC don't talk enough about Kacey Musgraves.
No, because I don't think JC talks about Kacey Musgraves much.
JC Musgraves?
No. Moving on.
Anyway.
Mostly because they liked her before this album came out, when it wasn't cool among indie kids to like her.
I mean, I have later that we should talk about the rise of country culture and indie music. So that's a thing. That's like a whole thing where I feel like a lot of people right now are very much so embracing being yeehaw, even if they aren't. Like, if they're from New York City, they're like, I love the country.
Well,
I love my straw like hat.
I feel like it's a very... I mean, that means a lot coming from me, somebody with a tattoo of a dog and a cowboy hat. But Kacey Musgraves is from Nashville, so she's very authentic. She is not a poser.
Real quick question for our guest today. Robin, you're from Seattle. Would you say Seattle is the yeehaw capital of the Pacific Northwest?
You know, I would say... Sure, why not? Honestly, I'm actually from Denver, so I'm from Colorado, which is way more country than Seattle is. But I would say, well, you know, Shania Twain is from Canada, so maybe they would give Vancouver that title. I don't really know where in Canada Shania Twain is from, but sure, I think Seattle could be the yeehaw capital of the Pacific Northwest. A lot of people like Kacey Musgraves out here.
Hell yeah. So, Talisa, let's get back to the yeehaw capital of the country, I would say.
Nashville?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Kacey Musgraves is from there, which means I feel like a lot of her music has more of an authenticity to it. But she's, like, especially for being from Nashville, like, from the South, kind of, even though Tennessee, I feel like, isn't geographically that south in the U.S., but she's very progressive, if you couldn't tell from the Follow Your Arrow lyrics. I think I have this theory that she is basically country music saying sorry for canceling the Dixie Chicks for not liking Bush Jr., and that is something I will stick to until the day I die, because we all know what happened. Do we all know what happened to the Dixie Chicks? Yes.
Pretend I'm 5. What happened?
So, in, I believe it was 04, like, when he was running for re-election, the Dixie Chicks were, like, very vocal about not supporting Bush. and like would talk about it at shows and like pretty much dig into him any chance they got. And like, while that's that was like, especially at the time, I feel like acceptable for like the rest of America to do, and like people on the East and West Coast weren't getting mad about it. The Dixie Chicks were a country band. They are still a country band. And like, especially at the time, going against the like Republican, like, what's the word for when somebody's running for election again?
Incumbent?
Incumbent, thank you. The Republican incumbent is like a no-no. So they pretty much got like immediately shunned from the country community for just not supporting Bush, which now in retrospect, a lot of people, I feel like even in the South, like agree with, because he wasn't all that great a president in most people's opinions. Yeah. So the Dixie Chicks pretty much like got their careers like ended right after like the height of their careers is like Goodbye Earl and like Cowboy Take Me Away and stuff. They just got fucking wrecked for not supporting Bush. But they were like always a pretty progressive group. And Kacey Musgraves is like even, I would say even more progressive, because she performed, like the first time that I found out about her was her performing Follow Your Arrow on the Grammys while being like the front runner for the Grammy Award that year for country music.
Yeah, I had a point. So when I was 10, this was happening, and I looked at Mom and I said, but Mom, Green Day just released their hit album, American Idiot. Why aren't they being canceled? And Mom said, canceled? It's 2004. What are you talking about? But no, she was like, she said, country is American. It's an American type of music. Punk is like not in line with American values. So obviously people aren't going to be receptive to people who go against that. Obviously, idiot, you're 10 years old, stupid. Anyway, so I'm thinking that, you know, we'll get to this, and this might be a good segue into what one of your next major topics is, Talisa, but Kacey Musgraves is from the emo scene community from her youth. Do you think, like, seeing that radicalism, but also seeing how the Dixie Chicks were kind of shunned, but seeing how Green Day was, like, praised for it and applauded, there's a lot of factors working in their favor, but do you think living in that ecosystem that was, like, raised on American Idiot and gave us, like, Riot and Hawthorne Heights and things like that, do you think that gave her a chance to take over country with this mindset that the Dixie Chicks started? Is that too galaxy brain? Okay, cool.
Absolutely, because I feel like, you know, being from emo upbringing type of thing, she was exposed to a lot of, like, emo is very kind of centered in major cities. It's, you know, Chicago and New York, pretty much, or, like, the East Coast in general. Like, the New York metropolitan area, if you include, like, New Jersey and Long Island. So it's, like, she got, like, these two very, like, city-minded things to, like, inform, I feel like, a lot of her opinions on the music that she already liked. Which does segue nicely into the fact that she's very emo, from her past. She is, the first bullet point I have to support this is that she's best friends, it seems, with one Hayley Williams of Paramore. Are we all familiar with Hayley?
Oh, yeah.
Wait, who is that?
you know, just a singer for this, like, really small band that was on this small label, Fueled by Ramen.
Also from Nashville.
Oh.
Also from Nashville. Actually, she's originally from Louisiana. I found out in an interview a long time ago that she did with, like, Ryan Seacrest. And then she moved to Nashville. And then about the time she moved to Nashville is when she formed Paramore, because Paramore was formed when they were all in high school. Riot came out when they were, like, 19. And Zach Farrow was, like, 16.
What were you doing at 19 and 16, respectively?
What was I doing at 16?
Yeah.
I was in marching band.
Hell yeah. You were making music.
I was making music too.
Hell yeah. I felt like Alex hasn't talked in about 6 minutes, and I feel bad.
I'm hanging.
So, Before we get too far into this emo tangent, I just want to make sure that we talk about indie first, because we're an emo podcast. We can pivot naturally to that, but I feel like indie is kind of on the edge. So I want to talk to our resident indie musician, Robin, and get her viewpoint on country culture and indie, and then we can talk about it, and then we'll move back to emo.
Country's hot right now. I don't know. I think I've always thought that country and pop punk and emo have had so much, always had so much in common. Like, they say about country that it's just three chords and the truth. And I would argue that pop punk and emo are pretty much the same thing. Sometimes they add a fourth chord, but they're very similar genres. Like, I think that most pop punk songs, if you like traded the pedal, or most country songs, like if you traded like pedal steel for power chords, it could just be a pop punk song.
Hey, that's a good point. Who do you think is the most country indie artist right now?
Oh, good question. I'm not sure.
I think if Chris Farren got
a little more twang, Chris Farren,
he would be like our, I mean, there's obviously Orville Peck. I think that's pretty indie country, but
Chris, yeah.
She thinks my tractor's born hot.
That's beautiful.
I
hated that.
I feel like if Jeff Rosenstock wasn't so ska, he could be country.
Ska is country. Ska defies everything. We'll get to the
ska fact of the day. Ska is the country music of Long Island and New Jersey. That's the American music of the New York metropolitan area.
I mean, to link this to our own program, I mean, Bruce Springsteen's pretty country indie
these
days. I think like Nebraska, which we talked about on that episode, is like very country indie because it's like backwoods, four track recording about serial killers. Like it's so far removed from what Born in the USA became that it seems indie by definition and country because of what it was talking about. I feel like country isn't so much Western as it is people who are outside the fringes of like what's considered to be like middle class and cool to a lot of people. And that's why a lot of times growing up, I feel like if you liked country music, it was like a class thing, which I don't think it's that much anymore. I feel like Casey Musgraves is like redefining it for a lot of people, especially with how progressive she is. So that's cool.
Totally. And I think like Rilo Kiley's very country indie to me, and Jenny Lewis.
Oh yeah,
that's
that like whole why can't I remember the name of the second record? Execution of All Things. Like half that record is just country songs. Like if it just didn't have like a synthesizer in it or whatever.
Totally.
It's really like it's like built up country music in a similar way that like, you know, a Casey Musgraves is, where it's like you can sense that it was went into the studio with like a singer-songwriter mindset of acoustic guitar, and then was just like produced fully in the studio.
Well, then also just the thematically, the way it like tells kind of character-driven stories, I feel like that's a very country music thing. And that's why it's fun for me to turn on country radios, because I like the specifics of country music. I like that they're telling you the brand of the car and what they're drinking and what the person's name was. And emo kind of does the same thing. There's a lot of like name songs.
I feel like,
I mean, people get doxxed.
Johnny Cash has a full rap sheet in his discography, I bet. He's just like charting the courses of all these outlaws. But I feel like, yeah, that is a good point that everyone's name dropping. Even if they're not like named, like a Julian, for example, it's like that ex or that lover that left is so colored in with so much detail. You don't even need the name. You got the full story right there. And I feel like indie tries that too. You know, like Jesse by Frankie Cosmos. I know that's a named example, but like you get the full picture.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it like plays in the fact, like it makes sense that like indie kids are picking up country now to kind of bring it full circle. It's like There's really never been anything separating country and indie music except for the class thing that James said before. Because both, like, come from, like, very, like, kind of, especially if you look at, like, indie music that's, like, a Sufjan Stevens or Rilo Kiley type of thing, there's always stories behind it, and there's always, like, a singer-songwriter element to it. It's just that it always gets, like, built up big in the studio, because a lot of those Nashville studios have a lot of the same, like, resources and, like, I don't want to say overproduction, but, like, high-end production as, like, a Steve Albini would have or something. And there's a lot of similarities between two genres, but it's always been separated by class. And now I think it's just, like, people are realizing that it's stupid to not like country. To just, like, sit in class and be like, I like anything but country.
I like everything except so rap and country.
Now, Lil Nas X made that impossible. Do you realize that? Like, that's so sick.
I didn't even think about that.
Wow, I just that came up it's with that. I hope that not, that's like, a tweet out there.
If it's not, you gotta like, that fire is that
a tweet.
Off.
That has to be a tweet that someone has already twote.
Twote the Raven.
Twote the Raven, never tweet. Anyway, sorry, Robin.
Oh, no. No, it's cool. Yeah, I think it's cool that country is having sort of a come up in indie music. I mean, I grew up with country music on the radio because I grew up in Colorado, and I got Shania Twain's Come On Over for like my 8th birthday or something like that, you know. Like it was like I knew every word on that record. And then when you sort of like I feel like this thing happens where the stuff that you liked when you were younger, you kind of start to distance yourself from it because you think you're too cool for it. And then when you come back around, it's really exciting to revisit it. And I did the same thing kind of with pop punk and emo, like where there was a time when I was like, oh, I'm past this. I'm too cool for this. I'm more into Bright Eyes. I don't listen to emo anymore, you know, even though
Bright Eyes might be the most emo.
That is like
country adjacent
emo.
Thing that I can think of.
You're right. Bright Eyes is very, because Bright Eyes is like Connor Oberst's solo records, and even those later Bright Eyes records are very country. And he had Emmylou Harris sing on his record.
Isn't he from like Omaha, Nebraska or something?
Yeah, he's from Omaha.
No, it makes sense. It's very sad and very like in the middle of nowhere. But speaking of being over pop punk and emo, you know who's not? Kacey Musgraves.
I was gonna say
because her and Hayley Williams went to go see Dashboard Confessional last year together and posted multiple videos of them singing along to it.
Oh my god, that's beautiful. That makes me so happy.
I'm just glad that they're like friends going to see Dashboard, like, and like just tweeting about it.
Which Dashboard tour was this?
I think it was when Kississippi opened for.
Just wanted to make sure that Kacey Musgraves and Hayley Williams saw Kississippi play.
You just want to know that's a universe that exists.
Yep, just wanted to make sure that's the world we live in.
Well, Hayley Williams is very, like, in touch with the music scene.
That is true. Remember when Hayley Williams tweeted about Pool Kids?
Oh, that was a good day.
That was a great day. Yeah, she's seen, like, a lot of bands in Nashville. Like, she just kind of goes to shows, which is super cool. Like, she's very, it seems like she's very down to earth and like realizes that she's super famous, but also like realizes that that's no reason for her not to go to like shows with cool bands. Because like I had a friend that over the summer was like interning for Journeys in Nashville or something, like some internship, and I remember seeing her make a tweet of, why did I go to this one show? I should have gone to the show that I knew Hayley Williams was also going to go to, and now she's there. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. That's like being like, God damn it, Hayley Williams with the Philomoka tonight or something.
You know, every time I see a band that's like, yeah, we're playing The End in Nashville, Hayley Williams, you're on the guest list, I'm like, yeah, sure. But I'm like, unless she actually shows up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, she could. She fully, like, still goes to The End and stuff. Like, she seems to be very in touch.
We love that.
We stan.
So cool.
Yeah.
I hope I'm not in touch when I'm as famous as Hayley Williams. I'll probably be too busy counting my jewels, though, to go see bands.
Like, you mean, like, jewel, not, like, the rubies and gems? You mean, like, jewels?
Yeah, like, I will be hanging out with Jewel, counting my jewels.
Counting your vape pods with singer-songwriter Jewel?
My jewels and my rubies with singer-songwriter
Jewel. And one jewel has been named Monarch, you know, the crown jewel. Never mind, this is too much of a bit. Carry us out of here, Talisa. I'm begging you.
Such an intense bit. I have so many bullet points on Kacey Musgraves being emo. Kacey Musgraves is, I want to preface, her and Hayley Williams are like a year apart. So they're both like early 30s, which means like 15 years ago when it was 2004, they were in deep with high school. So like Kacey Musgraves has mentioned multiple times in her songs and on Twitter. On Twitter, she mentioned that she stretched her ears and that her Nana threw away her plugs. And then in Slow Burn, she mentioned that grandma cried when I pierced my nose. So she's down for the cause. She also mentioned Dashboard Confessional in her Country Hall of Fame exhibit.
I didn't know about that. That's beautiful. What did she say?
Well, she just like, she's like citing her influences. It's like somebody like went to the country. I think it was like the Nashville like Twitter account was just like, look at Kacey Musgraves Country Hall of Fame exhibit type of thing. And like was like, there's pictures of her with like swoopy bangs and like piercings in like the Country Music Hall of Fame. And then like there, she's citing her influences from like an interview or something. And it's just like, yeah, I used to listen to a bunch of The Used and Dashboard Confessional and Alkaline Trio.
Oh my god, amazing.
I wonder what Kacey Musgraves thinks of Tom being replaced by
Max. I literally was just thinking that. You were on one today. God.
Oh my synergy. God. I saw it. I saw it live. Have you seen New Blink?
Yes, I have. I'm upset about it because it was the first time I ever saw Blink was this diet version. And I just like don't get it. Like he's reading from a teleprompter. He doesn't want to be there. This is work for him.
Remember all the memes that were like, Tom looks like he doesn't want to be there. Mark look also looks like he doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, it makes me wonder why they're doing this, but of course I know why they're doing this. Money, baby.
Money.
That's capitalism.
It's a fat check.
It's very true.
I don't know. I mean, I had a blast seeing New Blink play all Venom of the State all the way through. And I was like, it doesn't even matter that Tom's not there. I was like, whatever. I'm hearing the songs I like.
Wait. They played the song Aliens Exist and Tom wasn't there?
They sure did. It was very weird. There were blow-up aliens that they threw into the crowd.
They're just cashing in on his absence.
That seems like they're just...
They play the songs, yeah.
I hate that.
That's really weird.
Robin, I don't think you realize how big a Blink-182 fan James is.
I think she might have some of an idea.
I'm also a big Blink-182 fan. And it was also the first time I saw Blink-182 was this New Blink. And I was very happy. I was just like so happy to hear the songs, honestly. I was giddy. I was like high from it.
Yeah, I was kicked out of a Cheesecake Factory before I saw Blink. That's not important. The point is...
What? I would love to go back to that, actually. What?
I was overserved at a Cheesecake Factory and they asked us to leave because what I was screaming and laughing.
Like alcohol?
Yes, too many mojitos. Don't worry about it. My point is, I think when I first saw Blink, it was like nothing could have been below my expectations because of how built up it was in my brain. But if I went again, I would know what I'm seeing because I've watched enough live videos to see it. But I also would have my expectations lowered from the last time I saw Blink. And it was like, it didn't sound great, but I couldn't hear it over myself like screaming, you know? Like, now I'd be totally humbled. I'd be upset. Mark Hoppus has me blocked. He doesn't deserve my money at this point. Anything I give to him is a charitable donation to whatever bullshit he's doing, so...
Oh my god.
Sometimes I forget that Mark Hoppus has you blocked And then you mentioned that Mark Hoppus has you blocked, and it makes me smile.
Alex was in the car.
I was just looking for a reason to bring it up.
You horrible person.
What did you say to him?
So, it's funny because my bot today tweeted out the tweet that I sent him, and I was like, oh, assault in the wound, computer me. But so he had said, maybe this is the summer that I become a Juul bro. And I quote tweeted it and said, that's what new Blink sounds like anyway. And he said, haha, terrific. And then immediately blocked me. And I was in the car after I had tweeted it, and I saw I had a notification from Mark Hoppus, but I couldn't open it because he had blocked me at that point. It was the worst 30 seconds of my entire life.
God.
And Alex was there.
My thing is, so why tweet at you and then block you immediately so you can't even see it?
The best part of this is that he's 50 years old and a millionaire, and he gets upset because me, little blue check person, is like coming for his tower of dirt. As if I have a case. Like, I'm literally just in the car on no sleep driving to Michigan. Like, it's horrible. Can we move on?
Yes.
This is too much.
I'm
becoming unhinged.
You don't want to recount this painful experience.
I might become
experience.
The Joker by the end of this. I'm sorry. I'm a Joker dance to Adam song.
I have one last very emo point on Kacey Musgraves' background to verify her past of being an emo kid. And it's that Hawthorne Heights covered one of her songs, and she tweeted, if you had told my emo ass high school self that this would happen one day, I would have given you the finger and ran away in my black chucks. About Hawthorne Heights, a mildly irrelevant band covering a Kacey Musgraves song.
That's cute, though. But I also, like, Hawthorne Heights was, like, one of the biggest bands in the country at some point. Like, obviously, Victory Records sucks, so I have to tell this story. But, so when Victory was putting out Hawthorne Heights' second record, If Only You Were Lonely, it was up against Neo. He had this song,
I remember,
So Sick
this.
At that point. And then, so Hawthorne Heights released a bulletin on MySpace that said, go hide the copy of Neo in your local store and replace it with a Hawthorne Heights CD. And so by gaming the system, they were able to score number 2 on Billboard. The thing that came out in court when Hawthorne Heights eventually sued Victory is that you could tell that Victory wrote that and not Hawthorne Heights because they signed it with some, like, Latin phrase that said Victory or some shit. Like, something Hawthorne Heights wouldn't do. So, Hawthorne Heights was able to debut at number 2, obviously with some weird, racist, nefarious plan, but there you go.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
I mean,
I brought this down hard. I'm sorry.
I mean, no. I mean, it just, sometimes I forget how big Hawthorne Heights was, because they're like, and I mean, I was a very big Hawthorne Heights fan for, like, a couple of months. There's a Hawthorne Heights shirt that I bought, like, somewhere in my house in New Jersey, in, like, childhood bedroom. But they're so irrelevant now. Like, the most press I've seen them get is about covering Billie Eilish and Kacey Musgraves.
I think they have such a built-in fan base, though. I mean, Alex and I went to Bloodfest, and I walked through the Hawthorne Heights set, and people were going ape. Like, they were around for it. I think, like, I know I downgraded that really fast, but I think people are stoked enough to hear Nikki FM that Hawthorne Heights will have an audience. And I feel like the Emo Night crowd is, like, really kind to them. And I think that's good.
Oh, the Emo Night crowd. I mean, I work in venues, and Emo Night sells tickets, unfortunately, and helps pay my bills.
I work at a bar that has emo night, and same, but it also, even though I like that music, but at least the one that I work at sometimes in Seattle, it's just like the exact same songs, and it's never the cuts I want to hear, and it's just the same playlist every time.
I DJed an emo night once, and they had like a strict like guideline. They were like, don't play anything that no one will know, which is like fair. Obviously, you're a DJ. But also, I felt like no one knew the drop in Sweetness. I was just kind of like, who am I playing for here? Which crowd is this?
The thing is, so emo nights, I've attended a few, and I've, like, been in venues where they have them. And it's like, emo nights are built in the nicest way possible, because I have attended them. I want to emphasize this before I say this. They are built for the lowest common denominator of someone that just, like, had the radio on when they were 14 and heard, like, Ohio Is for Lovers and was like, I love that shit, and then, like, went home and listened to, like, other very popular emo songs at the time. You're never gonna hear any cuts off of, like, Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge that aren't, like, I'm Not Okay and Helena. Like, it's just, like, songs at music videos and singles, because it's, like, built for people that, like, are bros now.
Yeah.
Like, are, like, fully grown adults.
Totally. The emo bro crossover is real.
Embro.
Ebro.
So, how about this, Embros? I hate that. Let's go to ad break, Talisa. I feel like we've been running hot. Right. We've been running strong. Let's pack up our Silverados, please.
Yeah, let's follow our arrow and get into the song after the break. All right, we're back from break. Let's start this half where we talk about the song with a question.
First, what is our song? I have a question. Hello.
Let's start the half that we talk about the song, which is Space Cowboy. I was about to say Sea of Space Cowboy. Space Cowboy by Kacey Musgraves off of her record, Golden Hour. It is a very heartfelt, delicate song, in my opinion. So I would like to start with a question, which is, what is the difference between this and a Julian Baker song?
I do, I have an answer for this. I remembered this earlier today. We were talking about Nashville and people who are from there. I don't think Julian Baker's from Nashville, but she's from the South. I'll say that area generally, because I think
she's from Tennessee.
Memphis? Does that sound familiar?
That sounds about right.
Memphis is a place.
Memphis is a place.
In Tennessee. I think she is from, like, Tennessee.
All right, so we'll just say she's from the South, because I don't want to get this completely wrong. But
she is,
like,
from Bartlett, Tennessee.
Wow, Talisa. Point for Talisa.
Harry Potter
house are
you? The retention of knowledge.
Slytherin? Slytherin. All right, let's keep going. So I think with the Julian Baker song, the one thing you're going to have to get immediately is this sense of either inner peace or tranquility, or, like, the complete unease that is at the opposite of that, that gets you ready for a complete emotional turmoil session. And I think this song is just, like, immediately takes you in to a piano-driven song that's about departure and the aftermath. And I think, like, Julian Baker is also preoccupied with departure and the aftermath. And both of them are kind of at the end of their rope with be it God or be it this space cowboy, where, like, at the end they're just like, okay, I surrender, like, here's what I'm gonna do instead, you just go. And I think, like, I feel like the liberation that these two women experience through their music is, like, how they treat other people in their music, the subjects within their narration. Maybe am I off base? Please elaborate.
I mean, that's, like, a very well thought out response to that question, which I honestly came up with because when I, like, first re-listened to this song to, like, get ready for the podcast, like, the first thing I noticed is that, like on a pure instrumental basis, it's exactly, like, the kinds of instruments that, like, Julian Baker or, like, a Boy Genius collective would use, like, in the studio, and, like, sonically it's very similar. And I think lyrically it does have similarities. Like, as a joke, when I made this question, I told myself the only difference is, like, a twang and a sexuality. Which I feel like does kind of hold. There's not that far removal in the emotions that an emo indie song can bring and that a pure like country song can bring.
Alex, what are your thoughts?
I don't have anything really to add. I think you nailed it. It absolutely like has all of the hallmarks of a Julian Baker song, like in the, especially in the acceptance, what you were talking about, James, like this song, like Space Cowboy is like kind of about accepting that this thing is happening and you have to just kind of move on and deal with it and what's next. And that's really kind of like a lyrical hallmark of a good Julian Baker song. And so I think you both kind of nailed it here.
I think like the other thing about Julian and Casey as artists is that the things that they talk about are so grounded in like reality, and their signposting is so general, or at least so widely accepted, that Casey Musgraves can write a generally like very vague and very cliche quote unquote country song and use all the signposting. You've got Gold Rush, you've got Boots, you've got the Wild Open Wets, you've got a nested reference because the boots in this song aren't made for walking. They're not made by sitting by the door either. They're made for leaving. And I feel like all these motifs, and then Julian Baker has these like more grounded in religious iconography, like rejoicing and things of that nature. And then, but they create these things that are larger than the sum of their parts by creating grandiose arrangements that far exceed the earthly pleasures, country western things, and religious imagery.
Casey does it so masterfully. I think like she uses such simple images to convey such big feelings. Like I think about the very first line of the song, that you look out the window while I look at you. That just tells the whole story of in the song, and it's so simple, but just that line like conveys the whole experience of a relationship where one person is trying to get out. And same with like the Gold Rush line, like after the Gold Rush, there ain't no reason to stay. I love conjuring up a Gold Rush to sort of symbolize the beginning of a relationship where it's like all exciting and shiny and new, and then the river just dries up eventually.
Damn. That's damn. A moment of pause for sure.
I think we all just needed a moment to be like, wow. I mean, that's
sad.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like such a sad song.
Casey Musgraves, if she's one thing, she's very masterful with her words. I think that, like, I mean, even the name of the song is like, it's like embedded in the chorus. And it's like, when you read like Space Cowboy, you're thinking of, you know, an astronaut or something. Like, my first thought is Cowboy Bebop because my brain is rotted. But it's not even that. It's like in the song, like it's in the chorus where it's just like, you can have your space, comma, cowboy is like how it's meant. Like Pitchfork more so says it, that like the quote from Pitchfork is, the person she addresses on Space Cowboy isn't an astronaut, and from her withering tone, he probably isn't even really a cowboy. Just some misguided fool who doesn't realize he's living in a truck commercial. It's Musgraves who's bully riding off into the frontier.
Yeah, I do think there is that she is making fun of him a little bit by calling him cowboy, and I like that. it's definitely a song with a lot of peace in it. Like, it's definitely like sad, and she's accepted that she has to move on, but she's still getting in the like the classiest digs that you could get by calling him cowboy. It's like, oh yeah, you want to ride off? Go for it. It's fine.
I think like the thing that I really have taken from this song is that like when non-men write country music, it's not vengeful normally. I feel like there's a lot of like Taylor Swift songs that are vengeful and mean, and like they have like vitriol behind them, but that's also like youth and being like very famous at a very young age also talking too. And it's like, but here I feel like the storytelling in these narratives is a lot more genuine and has a lot more nuance. It's not necessarily like, boom, you're the target, here's how I'm gonna get you. It's like, no, this is how I'm processing these emotions while letting you also get on your way as well without beating around the bush or beating a dead horse, so to speak, to keep it in the country universe. Maybe not. I feel like
I would love to counter with one of my favorite country songs of all time, Before He Cheats by Carrie Underwood.
I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, I mean, like, in the beginning of my point, I was like, not usually vengeful, because like, that's a really good example. Gretchen Wilson has some really good heaters. Miranda Lambert.
Or
like,
Goodbye Earl, they kill him.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I really gotta work
Earl
on my
is a
point.
Great song.
Goodbye Earl is a really good song.
But I mean, to your point, I think the men in country music write less, at least in modern country music, write a lot less of this introspective kind of self-analyzing sort of music that we're talking about in this song or in, you know, other Carrie Underwood songs or other Taylor Swift songs.
Yeah, I feel like it might just be pop country moving in that direction too, because I feel like, you know, the example that I'll bring up is like Lil Nas X is like, if we take his entire EP as a country album, which I'm going to just for this purpose, it's like there's a lot of interiority going on about the struggles of fame, like on Panini. For Old Town Road, it's like kind of a joke, but you feel like there's a lot of road weariness in him. Like the idea that the persona that he's creating is like wise beyond his years, but also has like a past and shadows that he needs to negotiate while he's moving forward on his path on the Old Town Road. But I feel like outlaw country, like there is no interiority, even in like most Johnny Cash songs up until the very end, where it's just like, I'm tough and this is how I'm going to show it. I feel like once country got like softened around the edges, he let in like a lot of the interiority from pop music that's kind of like wearing it on its sleeve by design. And so it just rubbed off on country a little bit.
And yeah, I think Casey is especially introspective and wise in her music. It's very measured. It kind of reminds me of like, I feel like she will admit her own flaws as much as point out someone else's. It's never like, I don't know. She's never just like, you suck. she kind of reminds me of like Joni Mitchell in that way, where she's like, for some reason, I'm thinking of that one line where Joni Mitchell says like, I know I'm hard to live with, I'm selfish and I'm sad. I feel like Kacey Musgraves kind of admits similar things in her songs. She's like, only got a couple friends, or like, I don't know. She just seems very wise to me. And it seems like she carefully considers her emotions in the songwriting, and she doesn't have these kind of quick reactions.
Hell yeah. I feel like this song is a good example of that, like allowing things to ruminate, because it's literally about space and you don't know like if it's just about physical space or if like itself is like creating this idea that her expectations and her like future is galaxies apart from this other person that's like not even present. I'm probably stretching it, but we're in the stretching part of the podcast, so that's okay. Give me my space.
I like how we're coming up with all these grandiose comparisons and examples, and if you ask Kacey Musgraves where the song came from, it's about a horse.
Really?
So the quote, and she wrote this in her Instagram post. One day I was out at the bar watching this stallion charging powerfully from one end of the arena to the other, bucking and galloping at full speed all alone. Though I was safe on the other side of the arena wall, safe is in quotes, it kind of scared me when he came flying toward me, barely stopping in time. My riding teacher saw him coming at me and yelled at me to move away. I said, I'm fine, the gate is closed. And she said, girl, when they want to go, they will go. There ain't no point in even shutting the gate. It really made a mark on me when she said that, and I wrote it down. Space Cowboy came a couple days after. So it's literally like that, like she was at the stable or the arena. She heard her like riding coach say something, and then she was like, huh, that sounds really thoughtful. I'm gonna write a song about that.
How many songs about horses do you know? I can name more horses in movies and horses that talk than horses songs. Besides Old Town Road, I feel like that's about a horse.
Oh, I was gonna say Old Town Road.
That is about a horse.
Taco Cat has a song called Horse Girl. Horse Girls.
That counts.
Yeah.
I mean, Horse the Band, but that doesn't really count.
Does To the Beat of a Dead Horse count?
By Touche Amore?
Yeah.
Yeah. That counts. Reliant K has a song called Betting on a Dead Horse is Worse Than Beating One or something.
How do we feel about Horseshoe Crabs by Hop Along? Does that count?
No, that that's might a be crab. A stretch. That's a stretch.
It has the word horse in it.
It does, but let's hop along. Okay, where are we hopping along
or
to?
Or gallop along.
Talisa, where do we go?
I mean, we're pretty much, we're near the end of my notes. Really the only thing left to do is today's chorus. Which is the section of the show where we talk about what's been on our minds this week that we want to add to the emo canon. James, do you want to start?
I do. So in my intro today, I talked about how pop punk Floridians Yellow Card do not deserve $15 million from their latest lawsuit. And to continue this, I'm putting Juice WRLD in the canon, and he is who Yellow Card is suing. So Yellow Card wrote a record in 2006 called Lights and Sounds. It's about moving to California and hating it.
It's widely considered to be their worst record, or at least of the original stretch of Yellow Card considered to be their worst record. I'm the Yellow Card defender, and I like it. It's also probably my least favorite Yellow Card record.
So that record ends with a song called Hollywood Died. Yes, they wrote a concept album about Hollywood and had a character in it named Hollywood. Subtle. Anyway.
There's also a song called Rough Landing, Holly.
It's true.
When I first read about this lawsuit and I saw the word Hollywood Died, my brain, because like there's something broken in there, I first was like, Hollywood Undead? The like ICP ripoff band?
Honestly, Hollywood Undead suing Juice WRLD makes more sense, because what I'm about to say makes no sense to me. So they said, like, there's a line in the the opening to Hollywood Died that sounds very similar to the chorus of Lucid Dreams, which is like that very famous Juice WRLD song. But how they tried to penalize Juice WRLD was to say, yeah, you've gone on interviews saying you loved our band, and so we know you stole this. Which is like, well,
No, it's not actually even wilder. It's that he said he likes Fallout Boy, so he must have listened to Yellow Card.
Yeah, he hasn't even mentioned Yellow Card, not once. He mentions like Fallout Boy, the most famous emo band.
So the biggest the biggest own of them all is a cell phone, because a cell phone. Yellow Card is not considering themselves original at all. So is this lawsuit worth it? I think not, but I think Juice WRLD's fine. There's that song in Spider-Verse that's good.
That song's incredible.
Yeah.
I like a couple Juice WRLD songs. I'm not gonna lie. You know I'm the emo rap defender.
Yes. I really like Juice WRLD. I have a hard time hearing the actual alleged infringement on this song. My understanding is that the vocal intonation that Ryan Key, vocalist of Yellow Card, uses on Hollywood Died is translated into the instrumentation on Lucid Dreams, but I don't really hear it.
Accidents out on the highway to somewhere, they tell us about when we're young. Rescuers working to clean up the crashes before she can see what they've done. You left me falling and landing inside my grave. I know that you want me dead. I take prescriptions to make me feel okay.
Hear it somewhere in like the two songs that there's like a similar way that the melody is moving, but it's like not, like, when I was in school, for a lot of the music business classes that I took, we studied a lot of lawsuits. Like, I wrote an entire research paper about the Victory Records lawsuit. Like, I was in school during the time that the Robin Thicke, I forget who was suing. I think it was Marvin Gaye's estate or something.
It was.
Was suing Robin Thicke for, like, stealing, like, a similar lawsuit to what Yellow Card's doing to Juice WRLD. But, so I've, like, kind of had to do these listening exercises over the past, you know, 4 years. I can't hear it. I can hear where the melody is moving. And, like, just with the way that music theory works, all melodies are stolen because they have to move a certain way for them to be pop music.
As a person who's publicly called out someone for stealing melody, I think the point here is that it doesn't fucking matter. So, because I think, like, at the end of the day, Juice WRLD fans are not flocking to buy Lights and Sounds. They're not fan bases that infringe on one another, so it's not idea stealing.
I mean, the other thing is emo rap is so, like, on its sleeve about where it's taking influence from and also crediting that influence, that if this was intentional, I would find it hard to believe that he would not have credited it. So I don't really know where this lawsuit is going or why they think they'll win it. But you know what? Go for it, Ryan Key.
I just think this says more about the current state of Ryan Key, Yellow Card, LLC, than anything else, because if they were content just sitting on Ocean Avenue's double platinum status, you wouldn't hear anything about Yellow Card. They chose to break up again.
They did break up for a second time.
Like, how much goodwill do you think you have to be able to do that?
It's actually pretty incredible, the story of Yellow Card. They put out 4 albums, where the third one is the least liked of the 4, broke up, and then put out 4 albums where the third one is the least liked of the 4.
It's amazing what you can do when you have a violin. Anyway, I think we've been talking about Yellow Card for far too long for Alex's taste even. So Alex, what is your addition to the emo canon this week?
So I'm bringing up something that will actually prove to be relevant in a short moment, but I'm bringing up the Polygon's Unraveled video series hosted by Brian David Gilbert, and in particular the video "We Made All 78 Recipes from Breath of the Wild," which is actually made in conjunction with another Vox-owned website, Eater, where they went to the Eater test kitchen and made all 78 recipes, not using any extra seasoning, only using salt when the recipe called for the rock salt item, things like that, using the closest cookware they could find to the cookware you actually get in Breath of the Wild.
If anything, this just shows that game designers don't know what the fuck they're talking about when they're, like, making, like, in-game, like, cookbooks or books, because they can't think of, like, enough to populate.
Or more specifically, it's the limitations of something like cooking in a video game, right? It's like, okay, I'm not going to say, okay, they need yeast for this cake, right? Like, I'm not going to be Link and go collect the yeast item.
That's true.
Excuse me, you're forgetting the most important video game in the world, Cooking Mama.
See, that's true, but that is a cooking video game. This is a this is a Legend of Zelda RPG in which Link also get hungry, so you make him big steak that also make him go fast.
I thought his name was Zelda. I've been playing the wrong game, I guess.
No, it's Luigi.
So, quick disclaimer, this example of Polygon Eater Synergy is an example of corporate consolidation, which we do not condone after today's Deadspin news. So, just a disclaimer.
Unionize your newsroom.
Please do it. Talisa, take us out of Hyrule and take us where you rule. I'm crushing it today.
I rule the great state of New Jersey, whose capital is Trenton. And as I mentioned, again, I mentioned this in the beginning of the podcast, my wisdom teeth are revolting in my mouth, which is why I wasn't on the last episode of the podcast. basically my wisdom teeth are growing in and I would like them to be out of my mouth. So I had to go back to New Jersey because of my mom's insurance. Very long story, very boring. But the train that you take between Philadelphia and Trenton, because you need to take two trains to get to where I live, or rather where I hail from. The train from Philadelphia to Trenton, at the very end, when you're about to go into the Trenton Transit Center, you see the full this full bridge that on the side, and sometimes it's lit up, sometimes it's not. On the side it says, "Trenton makes, the world takes." It just broken up like that, like each half of the bridge has "Trenton makes, the world takes." And I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, "That's tight as fuck." And then Senses Fail named a song on their new record, "New Jersey Makes, the World Takes," because they're from like 15 minutes out from where I'm from. And I remember when I saw that, I was like, Buddy Nielsen's also seen the bridge?
Of course Buddy Nielsen's seen the bridge.
That's amazing.
I mean, it's a good bridge. Alex, have you seen the bridge?
I love the bridge. It's one of the most important landmarks of my life. For a time, that is the way I would drive to Philadelphia. So it was like, oh, I'm halfway home or halfway to my parents' home. So it's like, yes, this is the important landmark distinguishing my crossing the border from my one state home, New Jersey, to my new home, Pennsylvania.
That's romantic.
Yeah.
It is.
There's something, it's like, you can ask like pretty much anybody that's like from New Jersey and lives in Philadelphia now, how they feel about that bridge. And a lot of them like the bridge. It's a good bridge. Well, it's a nice looking bridge.
Let's bridge to Robin. Wow, I'm really crushing it today. Give me some Hulk hands. Robin, what are you bringing for today's chorus?
To put into the emo canon?
Yes.
I am going to nominate the song "Running Back" by Thin Lizzy. It's a, you know, beautiful song about lost love. And I think the lyric that's especially emo to me is when they say it's over, it's not all over. There's still the pain.
When they say it's over, it's not all over, there's still the pain. And I'd come running back to you again.
Then Lizzy wrote that.
Oh yeah.
That is extremely emo.
Isn't that emo?
I'm really taking a moment here.
I didn't expect that from Thin Lizzy.
Thin Lizzy is very tender.
This is insane. The show is over and we must all go home. Just leave me by myself. I'll be alright here on my own.
Yeah.
Damn. Is this like a power
nod? What an oddly tender band.
What does the music sound like? Paint us a picture.
You'll have to. It's like a great. It feels great. It's like a. I think you'll just have to listen to it for yourself. It sounds like a Thin Lizzy song. It has a ripping guitar solo. guitar minis, you know.
One time I saw one of those, like, you know, the memes where it's just like, blank is just blank for blank. I saw one that was just like, Sheer Mag is just Thin Lizzy. That's it.
Oh, that's bad. That's good. Sheer Mag rocks. You know Sheer what Mag other rock. Music rocks? Lisa Prank.
Aw, shucks.
So we're gonna turn the tables and interview our friend Robin about the new Lisa Prank record, Perfect Love Song. This is out now via Father Daughter, and if you listen to track one, you might see why Robin told us to talk about Kacey Musgraves today, because track one's called Rodeo. So I listened to this record. One of your Bandcamp tags is Cuddlecore, which I tried to talk about in the intro and we didn't get to it, but Rodeo seems like a punkier answer to Space Cowboy. There's like a similar vibe of like disconnection and letting go, but it's more of like a what you would do in the aftermath of departure is like have a rager. But like still have a moment to think about what happened. There's a looseness to what goes on this record where it reminds me of like a record from last year with a Bandcamp tag that kind of describes it. The Illuminati Highs record, where it's like, it's so tense and there's like a lot of romance that like falls apart just like we often do, but like it's delivered in a fun way, so it's like not like a Bright Eyes record. It's like what Conor Oberst would do if like his birthday was every day.
It's his birthday, darling.
That's nice. I'm glad that it's fun. I feel like I went through a lot of shitty stuff before writing this record, and I'm glad that it's fun to listen to.
Yeah, that's the other thing that I wanted to say is, like, it's obvious that even though to us it may seem, like, pastel-colored and fun, you know, like, the artwork and everything, it's very much obviously, like, within the looking glass of, like, the shattering turmoil that, like, a relationship has when it's gone. So, like, not to put you on the spot here, but you're on a podcast, so... What's, like, a piece of advice you'd give to someone or, like, an artist that's also going through this dark period and, like, negotiating it either publicly or privately? Like, what would you consider to be, like, the killer app in that instance?
The killer what?
Like, what would you consider to be, like, the antidote?
Oh, well, I think writing about it helps. I do, I mean, I guess with this specific record and, like, the specific like situation I was in, I guess the advice I would give would be like, leave when it first gets bad, kind of. I don't know, like there's things that you can kind of get used to in a relationship and start to convince yourself are okay, and I think it's just like to trust your intuition and not stay in something if it's like very much hurting you. And like, if I think for me, like a sign that I'm doing something wrong in my life is if I am going through a creative dry spell. And like during the time I was in this relationship, it was like very hard for me to write a song, mostly because it was very hard for me to be honest with myself about what was happening. And so I don't know, I guess I'm not sure what advice I would give. Also, just like, you just have to be sad for a while. I think like a lot of people tell you like, are like, oh, you should be over it by now, or like something like that. And I think a part of it, something my therapist told me, because I started going to therapy in the last year, is that when you're going through some kind of grief, that the amount of the grief doesn't change. You just kind of build up your life around it, so it becomes less of a part of your life. And so I guess the advice is to build up the rest of your life around that place of grief or sadness or heartbreak, and then the rest of your life becomes bigger than it.
Fuck. Wow. Okay. So hopefully this is like a more cheerful question.
Yeah. Sorry, I really went for it there. I didn't know where it was going to end up, but ended somewhere.
I'm glad you went there though, because I feel like we can tunnel our way out of that. So I'm quoting you from a different time when you wrote the album bio for Perfect Love Song, and you said, "I wish a different emotion was so alive and exciting to me. But love is just the one that feels so visceral and consuming." So my question is, what is it about love that inspires you, and how do you keep yourself in love with it? In love with love.
In love with love. I mean, it's so exciting. I feel like it's so exciting because it's just this thing that everyone experiences. And so it's like this very normal thing, but for some reason, each time you experience it, it just feels like the beginning of the world or the end of the world. I feel like, I don't know, I never get bored with feeling those intense dramatic love things, or also hearing about my friends' love lives or other people's love lives. I just think it's so fascinating. And I think that it's so fascinating because a lot of it is private. Like, you never really know what's going on in someone else's relationship. And so I'm just always so fascinated to hear. Like, I love those tabloid articles that are like Faith Hill and Tim McGraw, how do they keep it alive after all these years, you know, stuff like that. I'm not sure, I just love, and I think a lot of people do. There's a reason why a lot of art is made about love and heartbreak.
I think we all love love on this podcast. Alex is getting married.
I love love.
Alex is getting married. I'm the wedding DJ. It's a whole
thing. That's going to be chaotic fucking evil, by the way.
It's going to be wild. I'm very excited.
Goodbye Earl is already on the wedding playlist.
Yeah.
Goodbye Earl is a fucking 100 gex or something.
My name is Earl.
Great show.
I would never put 100 gex on the wedding playlist. Speaking of, somebody responded to the podcast saying that they listened to 100 Gex because of the podcast, and I would like to take full credit for that. 100 Gex guest list me to your show with Brockhampton.
You know, at the end of the earth in about a month, when we're all rummaging for food as we're in a nuclear war, I do want to say that I'm glad that our impact was that a thing that we didn't even want to include in the Emo Canon 100 Gex is the impact that our podcast has had on a listener. And that's romantic. Also romantic is that we're at the end of another episode, so thank you everyone, we did it. That was a praise chorus, a frustratingly comprehensive emo podcast. Our theme song comes courtesy of Ska2 Network. I feel like every week we have to say something new, so at this point in time, Alex, you brought up Unraveled this week, so what did Jeremy do?
So Unraveled has a new video in which they rewrite the music in the Fallout games. And I believe they create a new genre of music with the help of Jeremy and Ska2 Network. I have not yet watched the video, but I do know that Brian David Gilbert did collaborate with Ska2 Network.
I feel like they may have invented ska. That might be the bit. Because like in the description of the video, Brian David Gilbert said, "Thanks, I know a lot about ska now." Like, he shouted out a music director and Ska2 Network. So, very cool. Always doing something. That's some hustle that we can all get behind. And speaking of hustle, you can hustle on over to Instagram and Twitter at Praise Chorus and follow us. We don't post a lot, but we're going to get better at it. We shit post on our own personals. Let's just treat it like those. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts, please. Leave us a review. Tell us which one is your favorite out of the three of us. We won't keep track. For any questions, concerns, or to yee your loudest haw, everyone, yee-haw. Yee-haw?
Yee-haw.
Yee-haw.
Please email us at praisechoruspod@gmail.com. See you next time. One more thing. We've got a Patreon. Last week we had Tom Waring on the podcast, and he works for Patreon. Yet we still don't have any patrons. Why do we do this again? Head on over to apaidchor.us and sign up for A Paid Chorus. It's basically the same comprehensive email podcast, but you pay us in money instead of exposure. How nice. So we've got bonus episodes coming, ad-free episodes now. You can get episodes early and ad-free. That's really nice. We've got a Discord server. And so much more, starting at $1 a month. Hell yeah, please do it. And finally, yeehaw. See you next time.